Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, listeners. Tonight's broadcast of the Voice of Indie podcast is an encore presentation. That means no phone calls or Twitter tonight. Enjoy this rebroadcast.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And happy Wednesday, everybody, and welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, show number 52. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is my co-host, Stephen Jeeves. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing well, and how are you?
I can't complain. It's been a nice, comfortable low 80s up here today, kind of cooling down a little bit. I guess if you can call it the lower 80s cooling down, but not too bad.
So I am back from my trip now. I'm back in Alabama. Had a good time, saw some friends, even spent some time with my co-host going to the Rock Hall of Fame and to the Henry Ford Museum of American Innovation in Dearborn, Michigan, which is a great museum. If you're ever in South Michigan, that's definitely worth checking out.
Lots of fun. Had lots of fun, definitely. Episode number 52. That means we are in 1 year we've been doing this show. Doesn't seem like it.
Wow. Well, it seems like it every time the bill from Blog Talk Radio comes in, but those do add up. But we've been talking about Operation Arctic Sting, a Mac McDowell mission, which is book 3 in the Mac McDowell mission series by Robert G. Willis-Croft. It is out there in pre-sale now, hardcover, softcover, all the ebook formats. Virtually every place you look, if you want the ebook, it's only 99 cents until the August 4th release date. So get that ebook for book 3 right away. Now, last I checked, Amazon was still showing $1.99 instead of 99 for the Kindle edition. And I saw an email just came through from Amazon about an hour ago telling Lauren something about something else that she needed to do, and they were going to investigate and all that kind of stuff. So if it's not 99 cents on Amazon, it should be soon. Go ahead and place your order, and before the book is actually charged to you and shipped, it should drop from $1.99 to 99. Everywhere else, though, like Barnes & Noble Nook, 99 cents, get out there and get your order in now. It's Operation Arctic Sting, a Mac McDowell mission by Robert G. Willis-Croft.
And speaking of Robert G. Willis-Croft, Daedalus, the first book of 4, is now free in the ebook format. So get over to wherever it is you get your ebooks from and grab a copy and pay nothing for this one.
Now, those of you who subscribe to our newsletter saw in this morning's newsletter, there's an article there about Karen Ingalls and her new book, Learning About Autism, and how she held a release party and had apparently 60-something guests show up along with Carol Tucker, the primary subject of the book, Learning About Autism. She had a wonderful event, great time, took some cool pictures. And we've got a little story about that and some of those pictures in the newsletter. And if you're not getting that newsletter, get over to freshinkgroup.com, and you're in the bottom of the home page, fill out the little form there, and you'll start getting a newsletter every Wednesday morning. And these are chock full of interesting stuff, new videos, new books, giveaways, free stories, samples, and excerpts from other things that we're publishing, information about our websites and links to various things, as well as articles about what's going on with our various authors and musicians.
Yeah, definitely. You're going to want, if you're interested in publishing and authors and musicians and just all cool stuff, sign up for that newsletter because, Stephen just said, man, it's just chock full of some really cool stuff. And speaking of cool stuff, I have finished indexing Hello Chattanooga. So that's David Carroll's his newest book, and this is a really cool book. The indexing was tedious work, but it's done, and keep an eye out for that. That's coming in pretty soon.
Yeah, we're excited about this book. David Carroll is the NBC affiliate evening news anchor in the Chattanooga market, and he's been a fixture in the Chattanooga area for many decades. I'm not sure he'd want me to say how many decades, but he's been in radio and all sorts of media, hosted shows and whatnot. And then, like I say, he's the NBC affiliate news anchor now in Chattanooga. He put out one book through a different publisher that had a lot of pictures and things about history of Chattanooga, which is an excellent book. We highly recommend it. And then his first book with Fresh Ink Group was called Volunteer Bama Dog. And it's the story about media in this part of the country here, which is basically Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, which is the reference Volunteer, Tennessee, Bama, Alabama, and Dog, D-A-W-G, which is, you know, the Georgia Bulldogs. But it's about the whole media market and what's been going on and his experiences with it. And, man, he's got the stories and the photos and stuff. So we're really excited when he came to us with this newest book, Hello Chattanooga. I had to edit over 600 pictures for this thing, and we're looking at about 700 pages. And what kind of stuff's in there, Beam?
Oh, man, he's got the history of who's who played in Chattanooga over the years. I'm talking about going back to the turn of the last century, all the way through the big band era, you know, Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller and Cab Calloway and all those people. Then through the 50s with Elvis never played there, but he stayed in Chattanooga and did some stuff there. And then you got Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby, and you get into the 70s and you've got, you know, a lot of the big bands that played in the 70s, Glenn Campbell, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, a little known band called Alabama back in the 80s played there. And
yeah, there's
a lot
actually
of really
a picture.
Cool,
there's a picture of their drummer. I don't know if you've heard of him. Mark Hernan is actually in that book too. So if that's not worth the price of admission, I don't know what is.
Yeah, there's just a lot of really cool stuff in there, and there's even the heavy metal bands that played in there in the 80s, 90s, and the 2000s, and all kinds of stuff. It doesn't matter what kind of music or entertainment you're into, there's something in there that'll be for you.
Yeah, and it's not just entertainers. I mean, it's presidents and
politicians,
famous people, writers,
sports people, celebrities,
even just media personalities. Like you can actually see pictures of the little girl who was Little Debbie, who you see her picture on all the boxes of those cakes that I'm sure all of us have.
Deborah McKee.
One box in the cabinet. Yeah, so there's a lot of fun stuff in there. We're really looking forward to that. Okay.
All right.
We got some cool guests today, and we'd like to get a little bit of participation. So if anybody would like to call in and talk to them, make a comment, ask a question, or participate on Twitter, now's your time. We got a little roll in to tell you how.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right. So, first up, I will read the first bio since we have two guests. Mark Joel Herndon was born in Springfield, Massachusetts on May 11, 1955. His father was a Marine pilot, so he and his parents traveled all over the country most of Mark's life. Finally, they settled in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where he started playing with circuit bands. Mark has one daughter with his first wife. Now he is married to country rocker and gospel singer-songwriter Leah Seawright. In his spare time, Mark enjoys spending time with family and friends. Also, as a licensed pilot, Mark enjoys aviation as well as motorcycles and traveling. Mark's favorite artists are Bob Seger, Journey, Jean-Luc Ponty, Tchaikovsky, Rush, and Hank Williams Jr. Mark plays a steady up-tempo beat on drums. Mark joined the country band Alabama in 1979. Mark's fondest memories are, quote, playing the same arenas in South Carolina that only a few years before where I attended concerts as a member of the audience, and my flight with the Blue Angels. In addition to playing drums with Leah's band, Mark also works as a private jet pilot. Mark and Leah now live and perform around DeKalb County, Alabama.
And Leah Seawright, Alabama-based country rocker Leah Seawright, has been on a steady rise during her tenure as a recording artist and remains a strong force for women in country music. This national touring artist has shared the stage with numerous stars, including Luke Bryan, Darius Rucker, and Charlie Daniels, as she performs and expands her fan base across the country. The native of Fort Payne, home of Supergroup Alabama, Seawright has been immersed in music from family traditions and gospel musical influences. Leah wrote and recorded two gospel albums prior to her debut country album called Country Girl 101. This album had two radio charting singles, Country Girl 101, a club line dance hit, and On the Back Roads, with a video that featured legendary NASCAR driver Richard Petty, as well as current driver A.J. Allmendinger. While working on the album, Seawright met Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon, who came out of retirement to become her current drummer. In 2013, Leah completed her second country project, a six-song EP, a collaboration with producer Jeremy Stover, the wizard behind Justin Moore's string of top country hits. The first charting single released was Leah's raucous Till Your Boots Are Dirty. Leah wrote two of the six cuts in the new collection, including Mama Prayed, which celebrates the redemption that comes from a mother's faith and unconditional love, and Dixie Daughter, full of sassy Southern pride. Leah pulled off her fourth charting single in a row with the release of her second single from the EP, Set It On Fire. She released a third single from the EP, Dixie Daughter, full of Alabama soul that's tender and tough. The tune hooks you from the beginning, written from the viewpoint of the American girl next door. Her eye is on the future, including writing, collaborations, and recording great new music. Look out for Leah. She is high octane. And with that, welcome to the show, Mark and Leah.
Welcome.
Hello. Be on the show with you guys.
Ah. Are you out there, Mark?
Great to be here, man, Stephen, and being great to talk to you again. It's always fun to do these things, but you got my attention when you were talking about David Carroll, and I know him quite well through affiliations in Chattanooga, through, you know, where we would play shows there, and you know, we would do television and radio, and David has been there for a long time. He was always a big supporter, and I just want to give a shout out to David. I haven't thought of this in years, but he and I were at a REO Speedwagon show there in the Roundhouse. Chattanooga was like a second home to me. And REO used to have a tradition where the people that were given backstage passes, the road manager would come up about during the encore and say, okay, got to earn your pass. And I'm thinking, well, wait, come on now. I'm in the same business. I'm not going to fall for that, you know. But no. You got to get up on stage and sing. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right? And I looked at David, and he kind of looked at me, and he backed up into the shadow. He's like, no, you go. And so I kind of got pushed toward the stage and had to get up and sing on the stage with REO doing Keep On Rolling.
Yeah, you know, great song.
Wow.
Keep on rolling. Well, I was up there singing with the three female
God,
back
please don't start
singers.
Singing, honey. Oh,
Lord. Oh, no. No, don't worry. I'm going to prove why I was bashful about going up there if I do. But, I was up there with the three female backup singers singing my heart out, probably way off key, but I was having so much fun I didn't care. And I had longer hair than any of the girls up there. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those were the days, but I came off. I don't know if David remembers this or not, but I came off stage. I was going to tell him, man, you missed it, but he was nowhere in sight. He was gone. So if you're listening, David, I remember those days, and I know you do too. And I'll probably have to. I'm going to have to go pick up a copy of your book. So we have some fond memories, Chattanooga in the old days, man. It was like a second home. So,
yeah, definitely. No, it's a great story when you can say, wow, I had a backstage pass to see REO, but I got pushed up on stage and had to perform with him. Gee.
He's done that many times, but usually it's on the drums. So.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't mind getting up and sitting in with somebody. That's a whole different ball game than standing there with nothing to hide behind but a microphone stand. You know, that's kind of skinny. Dude, it was like terror. But I don't know. I just kind of watched the girls, and I just kind of fell into step with it. And after I repeated the chorus three times off key, I thought I sounded great. So I went with the flow. Had a good time.
That's all that matters, that you had a good time.
Yeah. Never mind the bottles coming in, the missiles flying through the air and the sour looks on people's face, but no, it wasn't that bad.
They said, who's that skinny blonde-headed girl up there on stage?
Yeah, wait, when did they get four chicks up there?
Yeah.
Now, Mark, in your bio that I just read, I mentioned that you, your father was a Marine pilot and you traveled all over the country. Where are some of the places that you've called home in the past?
Well, just all over the Eastern Seaboard, mostly. I never went west. That probably is what incited my hunger for travel when I was a kid, because I always fantasized about California the way we all did back in the 60s and 70s. Everybody wanted to be a long-haired surfer. And from the time I entered my parents' life, Dad was usually getting either duty on the Eastern Seaboard of the United States or TDY overseas. Marine families don't get to go overseas very often. And TDY stands for Temporary Duty Yonder for the non-military folks out there. But the dad would always – he would go off for anywhere from 6 months to 14 months at a time and be gone. And it would just be me and my mom. And we'd move around, I guess, from NAS Jacksonville, NAS the New River, Marine Corps Air Station, Cherry Point, Beaufort. We did some time up in Washington D.C. Well, Dad had to work at the Pentagon for a while, and about every year or two, I had to change schools, and it was always I got used to class. We have a new student. Will you stand up and introduce yourself, Mr. Herndon? Oh my God! And immediately, all the homeboys were like, "Hey, new kid, you die at recess."
Yeah.
The drill.
Yeah. And then, Leah, you're from the Fort Payne area. That's where you grew up.
Absolutely.
Have you lived out?
Where I was born and where I'm still at.
You've never lived outside of Alabama?
Never. Never. Don't want to, actually.
Okay. Now, if somebody's thinking, I might want to move to DeKalb County, Alabama, would you recommend it? You think it's a beautiful country?
It is. It is. It's. We don't know what we have here. Sometimes you get, I love to go to the beach. That's like my second home, but I'm scared to live there because which there are beautiful beaches in Alabama, but I'm scared to live at the beach because I don't want to ever lose the wow factor of every time we go.
Yeah.
So here we have a little bit of everything. You got rivers and mountains and canyons and
waterfalls,
privacy, and it's really nowadays we really live in the perfect place. And I don't know, my home's in Alabama. Hey, I should regret that.
Yeah. Now speaking of beaches, if I go to Florida, my favorite beach has always been, and this is all the way back to college, has been Indian Rocks. And I understand that place has a special meaning for you two.
It absolutely does. Years and years and years ago. Now, Mark and I dated for probably, 6 or 8 years, but I had teenage boys at home, and I did not want to add any more testosterone to my household. So we waited a long time before we got married. But he had been in flight training in Orlando, I just wanted to – he'd been there maybe, I guess, a week, and I thought, well, I'm going to book us something to kind of celebrate him getting through whatever training he was doing. And I found Indian Rocks Beach just on a whim, and we went – this has been years ago, and we fell in love with it. And that's our go-to beach. And we actually ended up getting married there. We love it so much. So it's very special to us.
Wow.
It's very quaint, old Florida, you know, no high-rises, just little houses, little streets, and nobody locks their doors. You know, it's just, it's a great place to visit. I don't even want to talk about it because I don't want everybody to go. It's my beach.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the giveaway.
Now, Beam, we have a couple of comments on Twitter, and then you said we have a caller, right? So let's do the comments real quick.
We do have a caller,
And before the call, we'll do a roll-in, too, because these comments set up the roll-in perfectly. We've got a comment from Helen Burrell. She says, fellow writers, upon visiting Mark Herndon's site, markherndon.com, I found he's written a book of stories, memories he's drummed up, oh, pun intended, drummed up over a lifetime. I'm eagerly anticipating this broadcast about musical Mark and his creative selves. That's a very nice comment. And Helen's always got a pun.
Yeah.
And Robert Willis Croft added, yeah. And then Willis Croft came back again and said, just watched Country Girl 101 video. Great. He put great in all caps. And then, and the reason I thought that might be a nice little segue before we take the call is because we have queued up the song Country Girl 101 to play for our audience.
All right. This is Country Girl 101 by Leah Searight.
Your gun.
that's got a high octane, high energy vibe to it there.
Yeah, and the video is terrific. For those of you who get the newsletter, the video is right in the newsletter today. If not, get over to YouTube and search for Leah Seawright, Country Girl 101, and you can watch the video there. If you like watching ladies line dance, it's definitely a video to check out.
All right. How about we
poor band guys, they had to suffer that day because they had to stand up on stage all day and watch those poor little girls with those cute little bodies dance with the crop tops on. It was torture, I tell you, torture.
Torture, I tell you, torture. It was a tough room.
Torture.
Tough room. And hey, and you know what's funny about that is one of those little girls that was in that video is a drum student of mine now.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Oh,
cool.
Yeah, the girl that choreographed the whole dance line, he's now giving her drum lessons. So.
And you do see Mark Herndon playing the drums in the video, too. So it's a family affair.
Yes, it is.
All right. So you want to go to the call before we get back to Twitter again?
Sure. We'll hit this call here. Hello, caller, area code 727. Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
Hey, good evening, Bean and Steven. This is Kent from Clearwater, Florida.
Oh, hi, Kent.
Welcome to the show.
Leah and Mark. Leah, first of all, I want to say how nice I love your voice. The raspiness in it is very awesome. My first question is, who is the guitar player on that song? Because that was incredible.
Well, I will tell you, he is a Nashville guitarist. He's what they call an A picker, as you can tell. He's the best of the best. They have like A, B, and C pickers in Nashville, and he's a studio cat. His name is Jeff King, and he's very flashy in his playing, and he nailed it. He did. So it's hard for people to replicate that. You know, guitar players
absolutely
are like, what? But,
absolutely.
Yeah, he's something
well,
else.
I love the
he's
song.
A,
I love your voice. Mark, huge fan, fellow drummer, percussionist, and I'm not too far from Indian Rocks Beach, from where you guys got married. So
Clearwater,
awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, where's some good places to play down there? You know, we're always looking.
Oh man.
Yeah.
We'll get in touch with Steven, and you know, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Sounds like Ruth Eckert Hall. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mark, my question to you is, first of all, huge fan. I believe I saw you way back in the day with Alabama. I think it was a Michigan State Fair. I'm not quite sure. But your timing is just perfect. Just a huge fan. And I've read most of the book that you have out from Fresh Ink Group. And what a great story. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, Mark, is, you know, being a fellow drummer, I was in a heavy metal rock band for a long time, and we played the Beef Circuit, you know, around Florida. And, you know, I toured in the back of a van with five band members and equipment, and we had some miserable times. Can you tell me one of the worst times you ever had touring or going out and, you know, before you got famous and played with Alabama?
Great question.
My goodness. Yeah.
That is one of the worst times?
Yeah, well, I mean, just one of the stories. I mean, you know, I've been there where I'm eating a peanut butter and jelly and, you know, trying to open up the back doors of the van and trying to get some air and, you know, just, you know, I mean, I know you've played some incredible places, but, you know, what were the just something that was just stood out to you and go, is this really worth it?
Some
like
of the road
warrior
stories.
Like possible
well,
plane crash.
I'm sorry, it all broke up there.
He's looking for one of your road warrior stories.
Yeah, just one of those situations where you just went, hey, you know, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make it, but is a, you know, just one of those stories where, you know, not all the celebrities that you play with or a big concert hall, just one of those where, you know, you were eating up peanut butter and jelly and going, you know, what's going on here, you know?
Yeah, before y'all made it big.
Well, it's probably, there's a bunch of those. You're from down in Florida, and I remember we were still playing a lot of club circuit stuff, and we were doing 340 shows a year. And
wow.
As you know, what kind of
wow.
a grind that gets to be. We had a night where we were playing at the Broward County Fair on the B stage, opening up for a local act that was locally successful, but beyond Broward County, they didn't, you know, nobody knew who they were, but nobody knew who we were, even less than that. And we show up down there. I think we'd done like 12 or 15 nights straight in a row, and everybody was tired. And we had a shot in the arm because some people from Atlantic Records were going to be, they were talent scouts. And they were there that night, and we knew that they were there. And so there was both a little bit of pressure and a little bit of excitement. And we, you know, I was always meticulous about my gear, and I probably drove the crew crazy before sound check, trying to help set up, you know, and I was always in the way and everything. But this was an important show. And Jeff, our guitar player, decided that he was going to treat himself to blowing it out after that many shows in a row early. He had way too much to drink before the show. And this is about 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. And he needed a little assistance standing up. And here we are. You know,
when you hear that there's a quote-unquote talent scout in the audience or a label scout, whatever you want to call those guys, and they're going to be watching you, you have lots of butterflies and lots of anticipation, like I said. Now, here's Jeff not able to do his gig. So I took him back to the hotel, and I put him in a cold shower and just, you know, kept him in the bathroom under that cold water for a long time, brought him out, put about a half a pot of coffee down him, slapped him around a little bit, you know, made him get dressed, called him a few names in the book, and we got in the van. We used to drive around in an old beat-up Dodge blue van, and we drove back to the fairgrounds, and he's reasonably coherent at this time. And I'm just, you know, I'm hoping and praying we're going to be able to pull this off. And sure enough, the big moment comes, and it's time for us to play Downbeat. And I look over around my ride cymbal to expect to see Jeff, you know, taking his first lead or something like that, and he's not there.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
And I'm going, oh, I'm going to kill him. Well, I couldn't see. And then I hear the lead playing, and I'm going, he wasn't standing up at his stage right position there by the mic. He was sitting down in a chair. He didn't feel good, being a trooper like we all were back in those days, he found a way to get around this horrible hangover he must have been nursing at this point, and played the entire show sitting in a chair, rocking back and forth like Skunk Baxter with the Doobie Brothers back in the day. And he pulled it off, but it was so stressful that I was still mad at the end of the show. And we finished the show and walked off stage and everything, and I'm looking around for these record company guys. They're not there. Where were they? They were gone. They never showed up after all that, so there was all that anger.
All that work.
It was cruel, man. It was all for nothing. So, you know, I got all upset, and I wore myself out on that night, and then it was all for naught. So Those guys not showing up after saying that, you know, we're going to be coming to the show checking you out really discouraged all of us at the time. And I think we kept rocking in the free world, so to speak, there in the Dodge, which we used to call the Blue Goose, the Dodge van that we had fixed up kind of as best we could for the traveling we did. And it was, I don't know, it was another couple, 3 years before we started to see an improvement in things. But I know you know what I'm talking about. If you spent some time playing the B circuit, and especially in rock band, nobody gives you any mercy. At least country people are a little kinder. The rock and roll world is a little bit tougher on the way up, I think. So.
You know, and sometimes those are some of the best times if you look back. But at the time when you're doing it, it's not, you know, the best time. But great story, Mark. I've been in that situation. And unfortunately, I didn't make it as big as you did. But great story. Appreciate talking to you and you as well, Leah. You guys are fantastic.
Yeah.
You're great. And if you ever have a signed drumstick you want to give to Steven, I'd be more than happy to accept it. More things to talk about. Leah, pleasure. Mark, thank you so much. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, deliver that drumstick in person.
There you go.
Well, that'd be awesome. I'm going to come see you guys. If you ever get close to Florida, if not, I might get to Alabama.
All right.
Yeah. Well, remind me of it. You remind me of that when you get up this way, and we'll hook you up, man. No problem.
We'll talk. All right. I'm going to turn it over to the guys. They got a lot to talk about. Leah, Mark, thank you so much. Love you guys. You guys are awesome. Appreciate
you. Love
you
too, buddy.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
Thanks for
coming. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And Mark, don't ever get up, man. Don't ever give up. Keep going, man.
I don't plan on it. Thank you, man.
Yep. Now, those Road Warrior stories, there's a lot of those that are in the book. The book,
yes,
The High Road, Memories of a Long Trip, including one that always reminds me of the movie Almost Famous, where they all came fairly close to crashing their tour plane. There's definitely some exciting stories in there that you want to check out. We do have a comment.
I was going to allude to that a little bit with Ken there, but I didn't want to give away too much of the book. And he's more, I know exactly what he was wanting is those days when we all played those kind of places. And it's way harder than what people realize. It really is. And my hat's off to him because he did it in the rock and roll world. Like I said there, the rock and roll club life is a little harsher than the way the country stuff used to be. So he's, my hat's off to him.
Yep.
Now, go ahead, Stephen.
I was going to say, we do have a comment on Twitter from Karen Ingalls. She says, I'm a fan of country music, anxious to read your book. Look at
and
that.
It's a good
Sold
book,
another
Karen.
Book. It is an excellent book, yeah.
Well, thank you, Karen. Whatever venue you bought the book through, but I just want a reminder that if she gets it through my website, it'll come to me first, and I'll sign it to her or whoever she would like me to sign it to and send it out from there. So.
Yep, and that's to anybody who goes to markherndon.com and wants an autograph, personalized copy. You can get your copies there.
Yeah, now talking about the Road Warrior stories, we'll start with Mark first. How did you become interested in music, and what was the path that got you into playing drums?
Well, I wish I would have stuck with it because I probably could have been a more successful songwriter, but I started out with piano. It's kind of hard to write songs on drums, but my grandmother and mother were both accomplished pianists. My grandmother especially, she was quite privileged to play with the New York Philharmonic for a few years back in her prime. And
impressive.
Yeah, she was quite the musician. So maybe I got a little bit in my blood from her for that. But not near as much talent probably, but I naturally with I used to call my grandmother Dee Dee. Naturally with Dee Dee and my mother playing piano the way they did, it was natural that little Mark was going to take piano lessons too. I didn't like it from day one, mainly because the piano teacher was the scariest dude you ever want to see. Let me tell you, he was about 9 feet tall. He had, think Rasputin here. This guy was from the Ukraine, 9 foot tall, had a beard probably 5 feet long,
wow.
Long black hair. I mean, he lived in a house that looked like the Addams Family house, and he came to the door. The door that he came to when I first knocked on the door was about 8 feet tall, like right out of a Dracula movie with the brass knockers on the front of it, you know. And the door just creaks open, and he comes to the door. He goes, "Da?" I said, "I'm here about piano lessons." He motions with his head to get inside. I'm like, oh, man. I look back. Oh. My mom had dropped me off at this guy's house. I look back at her thinking this is the last time I'm ever going to see her or anybody else for that matter. And I go back in his house. It was this labyrinth of sheet music piled up on either side of these pathways. He was a hoarder before there was such a thing. And it dimly lit. It smelled like mothballs. And there was a little room in the back by the back porch with one lamp and a grand piano. And this guy lived in a house with like 30 cats. And two of them, like the two Siamese cats that are in the old Disney, what's the name of that movie?
Jungle Book.
Yeah. Those two cats are lying on the top of the piano looking at me like, "We are going to have you for dinner." Well, and so, you know, it just every lesson was terrifying like this. And he would hit my hands with a ruler when I would mess up. He'd start swearing in some kind of Russian language, and I was scared to death of this guy. But I'm rambling with this. But I had to do a recital, right? After we had gotten through book two, you're going to play the recital. You're going to play it with the other students, and you're going to play it well. And I'm going to be watching. All the parents are going to be there. You'll make me look good, no? Huh? So I go play this recital. I forget it was some hotel ballroom that seated, you know, 100 people, all the parents of all his students in New Bern, North Carolina. This is about 1967. And it came my turn to go out and play. And I flubbed the first number. You know, I take a seat at the piano and all these eyeballs staring at me. And I mean, I'm just about to have a stroke. And I start playing this stupid song and I blew the first verse of it. And I had to start all over. So I'm, you know, panic level 11 here. So I stumble through the first number and I start relaxing a little bit. I played the second number a little better and it was over. And I took my bow and ran off the stage like a spaz, you know. Oh, gosh. And I thought that I did really bad. But old Igor, the terrible there, was standing in the curtains off the side of the stage. And he came up to me and he kind of put his huge bear paw around my shoulder, and he gave me like a noogie on the top of my head. He goes, "You did good, no? I'm very proud." And he pats me on the back and everything and just gave me a big old squeeze, and I figured, well, this guy isn't all that bad after all. But that's the warm and fuzzy of it. The rest of it was that the other kids thought I was sissy for playing piano, and I got in a few scrapped because of it, and I decided this ain't worth it. I don't see the point in carrying on, and they didn't. My mother, grandmother didn't make me continue, thank God. But just a few short years later, I had a friend that was in a rock band, and he was a drummer. And that's how I got introduced to the drums, because these guys were very good. They played our senior prom, and all the kids were lined up in front of the stage watching the band, kind of like a concert, and especially the girls. And since, you know, I wasn't big enough to play football, except they used me for the ball a few times, I decided to, hey, I think I can do that. Look at all these chicks looking at the drummer. Wow. So that's how all that got started.
Let me add a little interlude to that story. His date for the prom actually left, and he never knew it because he was so enthralled with the drummer as well.
Oh.
I was one of those kids leaning against the stage, and I looked around for her, and she was long gone.
Oh.
Now, Leo, how did you get into music? Was this something from childhood? Similar story to Mark?
Well, it's probably not even half as interesting a story, but my whole family was musicians. We, growing up here in Alabama, out in the sticks, we just kind of went to each other's houses on the weekends, all the cousins and aunts and uncles, and, you know, we'd cook out and sit on the porch and play music. Everybody, you know, would either, they'd play something. I don't know if you've ever heard of spoons. You know, you probably watched it on the clampets,
mm-hmm.
but everybody bring their flat top guitars over or banjos or mandolins or whatever, and we just sit around and play music. I have one brother, and mom and dad are both musicians, great musicians, singers, and then my brother is an awesome musician. I'm the worst musician of the family, so thankfully I could sing a little bit. But, that's kind of all I've ever known, from the time. It's just music has been like definitely a constant in my life since as far back as I can remember. So when I was in high school, though, a friend of mine taught me, and I could sing, but I would hide in my bedroom and sing and record myself on those old. Do you remember the old tape players, and you had to mash play and record at the same time for it to record you? But I'd record myself in my room, and I would. It was so funny. I would get it. I had a old red book hymnal book, and I didn't like the old gospel songs, and I didn't know any of the songs in it. Maybe two or three, like Amazing Grace, and you know some of the standard old gospel songs. But I would make up my own melodies to all those songs and sing them in my room and record myself that nobody could hear me sing. And I came in from, I always played sports and stuff. I grew up with 17 boy cousins, so I was pretty scrappy growing up, tomboy. But I came in from basketball practice, and my brother, who was only a year older than me, and I had a crush on most of his friends, was sitting in the living room with some of his friends, and they were playing those tapes of me singing, and I literally wanted to die. That was the most embarrassing. But they were all like, no, you can sing. So that gave me my first little bit of encouragement, just, you know, them saying, no, we like it. That's great, because I was so embarrassed. Oh, God, I still remember that day to this day. But so in high school, a friend of mine taught me that we auditioned to be background singers in a little high school band, and we just mainly played. We weren't even old enough to get into bars, so we just played little private events and little family gatherings and stuff like that. We had a little band. So I started out in a little band called Ricochet. It's funny. I hadn't thought about that in years, but with just some kids, basically, and that's kind of how it all, I guess, as far as performing, that's where it started for me, was in that little band. And I started singing, getting out there and singing a couple of songs by myself, and I guess my confidence grew from there, but I wasn't always confident. That's basically my story. It's not, I didn't have any kind of wild prom experience, but
nobody went home with somebody else, huh?
No.
Okay, so Terry Ingles is saying, thanks, Mark, I will contact you. So I think you've got a fan out there, Mark. Now, Beam, you said we have a caller. Let's go ahead and play another song first and then take that call. This one would be Mountain Music, the Alabama band.
Yeah, before we play that, Verwayne Greenhoe is chiming in on Twitter as well. He says, sitting around on the back porch every Saturday night playing our horns. I was a cornet or trumpet player. Having fun back in the late 60s with my neighborhood friends. I loved it.
Yeah.
So glad that Verwayne and his wife Lisa have tuned in again tonight. They are quite loyal listeners to the show, and we are thankful to have them. Mountain Music from Alabama. I believe this
is live.
Live version.
All right. Live version from 1981 with Mark Herndon on drums.
Right. That's Live Alabama from 1981, Mountain Music.
That was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I know. I was just 3 years old.
Yeah.
The drumming prodigy.
Yeah.
We do have a caller, so we will go ahead and take that call right now. Hello, caller, area code 469. You are on the air. Where are you calling from, and what's your name?
Hi, Beam. It's Jan. How are you?
Hello, Jan. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Jan.
Welcome to the show.
I'm good. Oh, my goodness. This has been so much fun listening, and I just had to chime in. Mark and Leah, I so enjoyed talking to you guys and then having you on my Sunday spotlight on my blog, and that was so much fun. But I had no idea, Mark, that you were such a storyteller.
He is.
I know, right? I think you are a born storyteller, just the way you described your piano teacher. But so I did not know about you that you started out songwriting. So I'd like to ask a little bit about that. Did you have any songs recorded? Talk about your songwriting a little bit.
Well, I may have caused you to jump to conclusions. I might be a song scribbler. I don't have a catalog or anything like that. I was privileged enough to get to write with the guys a few times on a couple of efforts during our career. But there's another several hours worth of stories of why that didn't continue after a certain point. Some of it funny, some of it not. But I was fortunate enough to be part writer on Christmas and Dixie, plus a couple of B-side songs on some singles. I have written some songs for Leah. I have written a couple of things for Leah over the years. She, on the other hand, is a far greater songwriter than myself. And I don't even consider myself a songwriter, really, but I usually defer to her because she has the gift of simplification. I get to thinking too much along the composition lines side of things, and she can sum up whole paragraphs of thoughts with just one line, that's just as much of a gift as being able to write in novel form to me.
I totally agree. In fact, I think it is, is maybe even more so.
He is selling himself short. He is just as good as a songwriter as he is a storyteller and a book author. I guess a lot of things that he writes is more poetic, like in the poetry form, and then he just hands it off to me. He's like, hey, can you make a song out of this? And I'm like, yeah, this is great. I've got so many, I don't even know if you could call them poems, but they could be definitely turned into songs. But I'm better at, like, putting a melody and a voice to the lyrics that he writes. But he's a great songwriter. He comes up with great ideas and selling himself short. He is.
I had a feeling that might be the case.
That worked pretty well for a duo. What was it? They didn't do much. Taupin and Elton John.
Yeah.
Oh, Bernie.
Bernie Taupin and Elton John, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and one more real quick question for you, Mark. But before I ask it, I have to tell you, Leah, I absolutely love your accent.
Oh, my goodness. I hate to hear myself talk or sing. So they're playing my songs, and I'm covering my ears like, oh, my God, I sound like such a hick. But I guess I am a hick. So.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's authentic, and I love it. So, Mark, my question for you really quickly is, did you keep a diary, or did you just, when you decided to write this book, did you just, like, go backwards in memory? Or did you keep a journal? Did you write things down? I'm just curious about that process.
I pulled it all out of me way brain. I remember things. I'm blessed with a good memory from a long time ago. Apparently, I didn't kill all my brain cells because I can remember a lot of details about a lot of individual nights and trips and venues and flights and shows and people and places and smells and colors and lighting and vibes and atmospheres, and it just I don't know, maybe I'm just Maybe that's not unusual, but it was very easy for me to write that book with recall like that.
Right.
I did keep a diary for a while when all this was very new to me. But as it progressed over the years, it was a career, and things started being sort of the same, and my diary entries became rather redundant when I would look back on them. And like Leah said, I don't like listening to myself sing or hearing myself talk. I didn't like reading some of the stuff that I put in the diary, so I really don't know what happened to it. There was only a couple of, I remember thinking there's really only two or three pages out of this thing I need to save. And I don't know what
right.
happened to those. They just got lost in a move or something like that. But
thank you for your answer. That
book,
was just a curious question.
That was
yeah,
a great
book,
question, by the way, Jan.
That book just all, it just came from, the book came from memory and, you know, maybe consulting a few notes about
mm-hmm.
venues or something like that. But, yeah, it's just the way I
awesome.
The way it happened.
He
well,
needs to write another book
I,
because he's told me probably 20, at least 20 other stories. And I'm like, why did you not put that in your book? I mean, it's like they keep. I guess he opened the floodgates when he wrote that book, and I'm like, you got to write a volume two, or like you got
the sequel.
Exactly. So many cool stories.
I totally agree with her, Mark.
Well, listen, I promise that I will do this. It bugs me that I have been rather late forthcoming with this, and I will get to this, and I need a few ducks in a row as far as a place to work from to
mm-hmm.
keep the juices flowing, so to speak. But this is an ongoing household argument that Leah also needs to write a book. And it's her book. It would come from a very, she had a very tough upbringing, and she came from and through some incredibly hard times, and she is such a survivor, and she was saved and anointed at such an early age to not follow down the same path that so many people that have upbringings like that do, and they follow suit, and they follow the path to perdition and ruin. And Leah chose not to do that. And the stories that she's told me over the years along the way are both frightening and dark, but in the end, what a positive, because she's living proof that you can make a difference in that if you choose to. And you can be an inspiration. You can be an inspiration.
And it sounds like... Sounds like it would be something that would be very helpful to maybe a lot of people. So there you go, Leah.
Well, you know, but I see it, you know, and she's probably going to be mad at me for telling this on her, but she's a little afraid to go there. And, you know, I get that. I totally get that. There's some things that none of us probably want to go and back and visit, but, you know, we gently prod each other towards writing these books. Maybe we'll come to fruition one of these days.
Well, let me just throw this little bug in your ear, and then I'm going to get off here. Sometimes when things are too hard to write, which was the case for me with my story, I chose to tell it through fictitious characters. That way I could remove myself from it and let the characters tell the story.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea.
All right, guys. Well, I'm loving listening to you. It's so great to hear everything you're saying, and I'm going to get off and let things continue on. But it was just great to get to hear you tonight.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thanks,
hey,
Jan.
Thanks, Jan.
Jan,
you're very welcome.
Thank you for calling in, Jan. I just wanted to give you a shout out. That was a really fun interview we did.
I wish you the best on your blog and your continued books too. We had a great time talking that morning. I do remember that well.
We really did.
Yeah, we did.
And I think we were in Indian Rocks Beach when we did that.
What's funny is Jan was my first. That was the first interview.
I love it.
Yep, that was the first interview I did after getting the book out there. So there you go.
All right. Thoroughly and completely honored.
Thanks, Jan.
Thank you, Jan.
All right. Thank you, guys. And I'm going to get off here and let y'all carry on.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, Beams, since we're talking about the book so much, maybe it's a good time to go ahead and roll that commercial.
Okay, we can do that.
What drives a man to spend 26 years performing night after night? To persevere through a stifling tour bus, bad food, strange women, flared tempers, a plane nearly blown from the sky. Just how did that troubled military brat with a dream claw his way from dirt floor dive bar shows to the world's biggest stages? Aviator, author, and Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon lived that dream playing with Alabama, one of the most popular and celebrated bands of all time. He learned some hard lessons about people and life, the music industry, the accolades and awards, how easy it is to lose it all, and how hard it is to survive, to embrace sobriety, to live even one more day. Herndon's poignant memoir offers a tale at once cautionary and inspirational, delightful and heartbreaking, funny yet deeply personal. From innocence to rebellion to acceptance, can a man still flourish when the spotlight dims? Are true forgiveness, redemption, and serenity even possible when the powerful say everything you achieved somehow doesn't even count? That you're not who you and everyone who matters thought you were? Find all this and more in Mark's remarkable memoir, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in paperback and ebooks, and now in the keepsake dust-jacketed hardcover edition demanded by true fans. Mark Herndon refuses to slow down. So look back, look ahead, and join him on the trip. He's taking the high road.
All right.
Now, the video for that commercial is over on YouTube, so get over there and watch it.
No, I wanted to kind of throw in something here. Today we lost Dusty Hill, the bass player of ZZ Top. He passed away.
72.
Not too long ago, we lost Charlie Daniels. And I know you, Mark and Lee, you both had some interaction with Charlie. Were you able to stay in touch with him? Or did you lose touch with him?
No, I stayed in touch with him somewhat. Charlie and Alabama toured together co-headlining for almost 3 years. It was a package that had tremendous chemistry, and we were all mutual fans of one another, and thus grew to be just a rolling family across North America. And it was probably the apex of my career as far as everything just being so much fun and so fulfilling and keeping some great company. And Charlie and I got to be pretty close in a sort of, I admired him so much because he is and was everything that you thought him to be as a fan. There's a good story in the book about how I got to know Charlie, and it's an anecdotal story, and it's worth the price of admission, but I'll let Stephen coach me whether I should give that away or not, but it's pretty funny, and it was
the
beginning.
In the book.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that was a funny story.
It was the beginnings of terms of endearment between I think Charlie and me and a lot of the members of his staff and band, many who, like Charlie, have flown west, and I'll never forget those days or any of those people. Charlie was kind of, I don't know, he was kind of he's a friend and a fellow performer, musician, a brother, player, and everything. But Charlie was a little bit on the fatherly role towards me. I was still very young, and Charlie had a lot of experience, and he would always offer me a little bit of advice without sounding like dad. You know, he just kind of take you under his arm and, you know, say, son, I don't know if I'd do that if I were you. Or, he pulled me behind. I remember in Lakeland, Florida, one night, the buses were all parked right. The backstage door and the stage are very close. It's a roll top door, and the buses were parked right behind that roll top door, and the door was up for loadout. The show was over, and I had left the dressing room. And I was walking to my bus, and there was a lady, and there were like two ladies and a little girl, and they were wanting a picture. And I don't know, I don't really remember. It may have been a bad night, or I might have been in a bad mood. Yes, performers are human. We're not perfect. I might have not been feeling well, whatever. I gave the lady who asked for a picture kind of a brush off. And, like, I just didn't have time for her, and the bus was only 10 feet away, and I went on the bus. A couple of days later, I met Charlie in the parking lot walking into soundcheck, and I forget the next city we were in, but we walked between the buses there to the backstage entrance, and right before we went in the door, Charlie stopped. He said, you know something, I watched you the other night in the lake room. I said, what do you mean? He said, when you brush those ladies off for pictures. And I thought, what? And he goes, yeah. I said, ain't no big deal, but I just thought I'd tell you, son, don't ever be ugly to nobody. It don't cost you nothing to be nice, and the benefits pay off for a lifetime. And he just gave me a pat on the back, you know. We walked in the door together. And, you know, I never forgot that. And the longer I live, the more the second part of that statement manifests itself on a regular basis. Because people like Ken, for example, who called in earlier, are showing me every day how much that this Alabama story meant to their lives. And I get emails, I get messages, I get people writing me about the book, all saying, yeah, man, we remember when you stopped and talked to us and blah, blah, blah. We remember when you were eating at such and such a restaurant, we came over and you signed my kid's T-shirt. Or I remember when you sent me a drum head and when I was sick in the hospital. Well, I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. I'm just saying that how true Charlie's words were, that the dividends keep paying all your life, and they come at the greatest possible times, and just makes you feel good, and it makes me very glad that I took that to heart, what he said, because there's nothing better than hearing from people that you may have had a positive influence on their life 20, 30 years ago. That makes life worth living right there. So
yeah,
thank you, Charlie.
I can tell you, my mom's a big Alabama fan. She saw you guys back in the 80s. You came through Michigan here, and she saw you. And your music was a big part of her life, as was a lot of country music, but she was a really big Alabama fan, and she still is. And so she'll be listening to this in the replay, because she's out. She's got to do some stuff tonight, but she's going to be listening to this. So shout out to my mom.
Well, hi, Mom.
Her name is Shirley.
Hey,
Shirley.
Hey, Shirley. And
Yep. And thank you for being a fan all those years, and I hope we made you feel good.
Now, my father's listening to this show, and this is the first podcast out of 52 that he's listened to. So he's a Mark Hearn and Leah C. Wright fan, too. He's out
Hello,
there listening
Della.
To his phone.
We are his fan, too.
Absolutely.
Now, we do have a couple of comments on Twitter. Right after we played Mountain Music for Wayne Greenho said, I remember that song, loved it. I think we all remember that song.
Yeah.
And then we have a tweet from Pulse that says, hello from Alberta. Michael Smith here. Mark, been a fan for 40 years. Bought 5 books, so I think we're covered. Leah, so great to hear you. What's your favorite songs to perform from the Alabama days? And what's your favorite songs to perform now with Leah? Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Leah, you helped me with the Leah question, and I'll do my best to see what I can cover with the Alabama side of it. How's that?
Oh, okay. Well, only because I live with you, I know these things. So,
yeah.
he loves Mama Prate, and we do that live, but he also loves it's another gospel song, an old gospel song that we do called My God is Real. And that's the point in our show where it seems like we kind of go to another level. It's a very bluesy, powerful, spiritual song. And all the band guys, it doesn't matter if we're playing in a dive bar. They're like, what do you mean you didn't put My God is Real on the list? We had to do My God is Real. And I'm like, I don't want to preach to these guys in a bar. No, you have to. So we always do that one, and everybody usually relates to it, and they love it. And I know that Mark loves that song, and the whole band does.
It's more than just performing.
It's like we go to a spiritual level with that song, you know. And so that's a great song that we like to do, you know, no matter where we are. I don't care if I'm in a bar or what. We're going to play that song.
That for those that haven't heard that song, it's just like,
very bluesy, very spiritual kind of.
Like Aretha Franklin meets Bonnie Raitt meets I'm trying to think of a great gospel group. What's the lady's name, Leah? That I'll always be our favorite girl.
Dorinda.
I can't think of it. What's that?
It wasn't Dorinda. I can't remember.
Yes. Duranis Pace.
Yeah.
Or it's either Duranis or Duranis.
She's not a household name, but we found her on YouTube, so we're
okay.
YouTube searchers.
Yeah, so am I.
She's a YouTube sensation. But anyway, that's the way that song is, and it's just it's my favorite, one of my faves to play. Yep, for sure.
All right.
But tell them about what is your favorite Alabama song? That's what they want to know, honey.
Well. I always enjoyed She and I. That's a great drummer song. That's fun. I liked a lot of the ballads. The Touch, Once Upon a Lifetime. I always had an affinity for My Home's in Alabama because it was our anthem song, and it was the song that got us some traction in a very slippery slope, which is known as the music business. That was one of the first songs that we got anybody to listen to us over. And it was kind of like our anthem, and it's always haunted me in the fact that it's true. My home is in Alabama. And I've laid my head many places, but here I am. At full retirement age, living in Alabama, so it was profound. I enjoyed playing it. I always enjoyed playing Tennessee River. That's a fun song. We always took things to another level live from the way they were with on the record. We always rocked them up a little bit where we could. just kind of put a live energy thing on it. So the sets were pretty high energy. I remember at one time we had so many. I mean, what a great problem to have. We had so many hits to cover that the show was three and a half hours long.
Wow.
And no cover tunes. I mean, we had so much material to cover, and people paid good money for a ticket. And so we had to get our butts in shape. And, I mean, it was at the end of most shows, the drum riser floor was covered with blood, sweat, and sawdust. So it was, it was all good. Yeah, there were some songs I liked better than others, but the fans almost know the catalog better than I do. So, pick one and I can tell you a little bit about it, but they were all good to us.
All right.
Now on Twitter, Verwayne Greenhoe says that his wife Lisa says that she likes your trailer. And Jan Sykes, who called in earlier, said, I can't believe I hadn't already ordered your book and can't remember for the life of me why, but I just ordered it from your website, Mark, and I'll leave a review on Amazon, Goodreads, and on my blog. Yes, those reviews are very important. Thank you, Jan.
Yeah, thank you very much.
They are very important. I go to Amazon, well, not all the time, but a couple of times over the last couple of years, I went to Amazon and read some of the reviews, and I have cried and cried. They're so heartfelt and so meaningful. And I told Mark, I said, I'm going to post some of these reviews on Facebook one day, but I haven't done it. He's so modest. He didn't like any stuff like that, but I'm like, I'm going to do it.
Well, the reviews help sell books. They really
do.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And they encourage the retailers to recommend your books as well.
Sometimes I'll read those reviews and I get tickled because I'll read, 20 or 30 glowing 5-star reviews. And then there's, then I'll come to the one guy that goes, sucks.
Yeah.
We all face that as writers.
It's either a good book has 5-star reviews and 1-star reviews. It's like, that's a good book. If they all have 3 stars, it's not a good book. So.
Yeah. Now, Mark, I remember when you brought the manuscript to us at the beginning, one of the first things we did was spend a lot of time, you and I together, going through it and taking out stuff that was not really you, where other people had gone in there and helped edit and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about the process of getting to the point to where you had a manuscript that you were happy with and then how you got your cover together and what the steps were?
Gary, when you and I got together with this manuscript, it had been polluted a little bit by another publisher that was not really interested in keeping the book authentic. They were more interested in inserting their personality and prose into a lot of the paragraphs that I had written by myself at home in front of the computer. And they inserted dialogue and things like that they would have no way of knowing the people that were being described in the story and their dialogue was being quoted. They would have no way of knowing those people, so anything that they inserted it into that dialogue or description made things really bogus and really phony sounding to me. So I got to the point where I had enough of that, and I indicated that to that publisher. And they didn't take to that very well. But and that continued. The relationship soured over several other points of disagreement during the course of trying to get a manuscript together. And what we were doing, unbeknownst to me, this I didn't know anything about this. And this guy had approached me about writing a book because of the tremendous amount of backstory that's involved with having a career like Alabama. And I took the bait, hook, line, and sinker, not seeing the writing on the wall that this gentleman did not have the best interest, my best interest at heart. He was really more involved in promoting himself and his supposed publishing company. Well, it got to the point of where we had some words about a promotional issue that I was not in favor of, and he recused himself from any further dealings with me or the book. So I was left kind of stranded without a way and a means to make sense out of this manuscript. I wrote everything in the manuscript, but I didn't know what to do with it. It was just a mishmash of stuff. The previous the previous publisher had said that he would help me get things in sort of a chronological flow, but he didn't do that. It didn't work out that way. So at the end of the disagreement phase and the falling out phase with this guy, I had this literally sheet after sheet after sheet of printed paper laying on the table, not without really having any chapter names, any page numbers, anything. I just had this nebulous picture of a book in my head, but I didn't know how to make it reality. I was stuck. So, Barry, Stephen, that's where you came into the picture. And Leah as well, and I want to give her a lot of credit here too, because you and she really saved my life on this thing, because Leah, you heard her say, I sound like a hick a little while ago when she was answering a question to a call-in. But what's really funny is that she does talk country, but she could be like an English teacher in high school, because she, before we brought the manuscript to you, Gary, she corrected all my sentence structure, or most of it. You know, she read it, go, this is a run-on sentence. Yeah, you can't use a double negative like that. You can't prepositional phrase before a pronoun or something like that. I'm going, huh? I've never passed English anyway.
Yeah. And
so she's got, you know, pencil in between the teeth and hair up in a ponytail, sitting at the table scribbling here and scratching out here. And so the first editor was Leah, and then when we brought it to you, then it got serious, because here's a guy that really knows more than what both of us thought we knew what we were doing, and you took it on to the finished product, which we did line by line.
Line by line.
Several times.
Several times.
Yep.
On the phone.
And
okay.
I can tell you, if you are so it's a good place for you to jump in there and correct everything that I've said that's wrong.
Okay, well, Mark, Leah, we're out of time. I want the listeners to remember it's The High Road, Memories of a Long... Go check out the music, Amazon, anywhere you get your music, by Leah Seawright, Seawright. And we look forward to seeing all of you again next week. Thanks for coming today, Mark and Leah.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for having
definitely.
Us. Thanks for having us, Stephen. And
thanks to all you callers and the people on Twitter. And remember, find these old shows on the archives.
Yeah, and we'll have to do this again, because this was 90 minutes just wasn't enough time.
Yeah.
And this was a fun talk.
Yeah. All right.
Okay,
see
everybody. We will catch y'all next week, and everybody stay safe out there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Beam. We'll see you around, man.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.